I need.
Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is Thursday, November 30th, 2017. It is 9 a.m., according to some clock somewhere. It's 9:01, actually, whatever. 7 years, I suppose I'm allowed to be late to one of these.
9:10.
We have our administrative workshop, and a majority of the board, Commissioner DeYoung and myself, are here. And we've got Community Corrections, Mr. Gowrie Rand here. I think he has a presentation, but item number 1A1 is grant agreement with State of Oregon and Josephine County Community Corrections for Justice Reinvestment Grant Program, something we're exceedingly proud of.
Is this your PowerPoint deal there, Mr. Nate?
Yes, Commissioner. Yeah. Thank
that's
you.
That's a new thing. I thought, wow, I push buttons on, see where it goes.
Just wait until it's in your head, and all you have to do is blink.
So I briefly went over the Justice Reinvestment Initiative and application in August of 2017. To be specific, August 31st at a BCC meeting. Some things have changed since then, so I wanted to brief the board on...
More money? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, actually, a little bit, yeah. Oh. Yeah. So in our initial application, we ended up... asking for supplemental funds as well as the regular Justice Reinvestment Funds. And I wanted to go over specifically what those two different funds are for and our strategy in securing the supplemental funds. So the $40 million is a Justice Reinvestment Initiative that was signed through House Bill 3194.
That's statewide.
Yep, statewide. And that is based off of the population for offenders that Community Corrections supervises. Currently, we have a little bit over 1,000 different offenders. There's snapshots that take place that determine the amount of allotted funds. For us, it was 2.99% this biennium for 2017 to 2019, and that equated to $1,191,840. Just so you know, there's a 3% random control test that's a requirement of Justice Reinvestment. Those funds are optional for the county to receive and to study their own programs. However, because we don't have the infrastructure in place for research, we donate that money back to the state to complete their own research. Just so happens that we are one of the testing sites along with Union County and Yamhill County. So we actually receive $100,000, which is above the 3% that we're giving back. It equates to about $35,000, but we're receiving $100,000 back, and then we're kind of a pass-through.
What does that study provide?
It provides documentation for evidence-based practices. So the study that we're involved in is for downward departures specifically, to determine whether or not our DARS, or defendant assessment reports, are determining future recidivism. And if that's the case, then this could be a statewide initiative to incorporate the defendant assessment report across the...
And a downward departure, I don't want to sound like I don't know what I'm talking about, but I think for the people who are listening to this, isn't that people coming out of prison?
Downward departures, back? Yeah, so it's similar to that, but... downward departures are basically if somebody gets arrested and they are qualified to go to prison based on those charges, there's stipulations in place that if the DA's office agrees to prosecute them and to allow them to remain in the community, that's a downward dispositional departure.
Okay.
So they, in other words, they qualify for prison. But the DA's office is saying, okay, if you do a defendant assessment report and they are likely not to recidivate if they go through your programs here in the local community, you can supervise them community corrections. And if you do so, we're hoping that they change their criminality and that they don't go back to prison. Mm-hmm. So that's
the key is to keep people out of prison.
For the property and drug-related crimes, okay. Not the person crimes. We want to put those guys in prison. If they deserve it, they need to go to prison if they're violating.
Do you have to document and keep track of all the, you know, I'm assuming that they're, do you get more credit for the worst, you know, if you're taking the higher risk people and keeping them here, do you get more credit or less credit?
We get more credit if we are reducing our prison usage for property and drug-related crimes.
Right.
So that's the whole point of justice reinvestment, is to reduce the amount of prison usage for property and drug-related crimes. If they are not getting out of their criminal element, if they're not making changes in their life, then we're going to revoke them and send them to prison. But the idea is to get them into treatment, change their thinking, which changes their behavior long term. So that's the initiative of justice reinvestment, is to reduce prison.
Excellent.
So,
and that saves money.
And that does save money long term. And in the later on in the presentation, I'll reference some of our projected savings. But the $40 million statewide is not only for the reduction of recidivism, but it's also for increase in public safety, which allows us to not just reference the reduction in prison, but also reference, hey, if somebody is getting arrested, we want to prosecute them all the way through the system, give them what they need, deserve, and move on. So it's also for accountability. And then in the victim piece of it, justice reinvestment for the $40 million as well as the $7 million is gearing towards 10% of all proceeds going towards victim services. And we've allocated those funds to the Women's Crisis Support Team as well as the Ivy Safe House. So it's a multi-agency approach. As you can see, this is the breakdown for the amount of money that they're going to receive. The far right column shows what the actual programs are going to be for. So the first line item is for secure treatment beds. They're getting, at the sheriff's office, getting $488,000. Prosecution, as I referenced before, it's not just specific to downward departures, but this is all prosecution for the district attorney's office. And keep in mind, this is just one pot of money. I'll go over the second pot of money in just a second. But victim services is receiving $119,000 out of this. Transitional housing, which is a really good partner for us through Welcome Home Oregon, is receiving $100,000. The basic needs PO for community corrections, it's one FTE, receiving almost $200,000. Rent and control tests, which I already explained, is $35,000. The cognitive behavioral therapy, or the CBT, in the jail that we facilitate at community corrections, it's a half-time FTE position, although we're supplementing the other half of it through community corrections allotment funds out of the state, which is kind of a full-time job, but we're getting half-time position for that, which is okay for now. Court reminders, FTAs, we're trying to reduce the amount of FTAs out of the court, so $10,000 is being allotted to that, and that's kind of it's called a fieldware automated court reminder, and it is automated the phone system to send texts and phone calls to people.
Failure to appear has really cost the whole system a tremendous amount of energy and effort and resources, because everybody shows up. But the one person you're all there for, and then you got to reschedule or something.
Yeah, reschedule, it clogs up the court system.
Yeah.
Warrants go out, so I've heard that every warrant that is written, it's about $500 to the system or the taxpayers, and so if we could reduce the amount of FTAs, that would just save a bundle of money. So that's for the $40 million. Our allotment is a little over $1 million, $1.1 million for that. Okay. In this last legislative session, the legislators determined that there's not only a $40 million pot, but we're going to have a competitive process for $7 million. This was very strategic in nature, because we had to prove that not only did we do well with the last pot of money that the legislators gave us for justice reinvestment, we had to prove that we had a good plan for future monies. We developed a really good plan, and we're proposing that this plan will possibly save taxpayers money, $2 million, just from this this amount of funds that is being distributed to us. Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning, sir.
So we put it forward. What happened there? Okay, there we go. So we put it before the commission, for the Criminal Justice Commission. they allotted us 14%. Now, if you go back to the original $40 million, we're only getting 2.99%. In this one, we're getting 14%, one of the $7 million. So we're very happy about that. And this one is intended specifically for reduction of prison usage. And it, again, it's a multi-agency report or multi-agency effort.
Who got the other 85%? Was it split up under all 36 counties? Or
there was, I believe, 35? 13 other counties that got that got part of it. Multnomah County, I believe, is the only other county that got more than we did, which is a very large county.
Yeah.
So we didn't expect to get as much, but we said, you know what, we're going to ask for it because we have a good plan.
Years.
That's for 2 years.
Great.
That's for 2 years.
The next county after us got half as much. So we literally did better than any other county. If you take Multnomah out of the equation, did twice as well as any other county.
Yeah.
So this is targeting the property and drug offenders, as we referenced before. For the downward departure sanctions, the sheriff's office is going to get a little over $500,000, and that's for 3 FTE. The whole point of having additional FTE is so we can have more long-term sanction options for the folks that are, if they deserve prison, right, they don't go to prison, they stay in the community. We want to make sure that when we start holding them accountable for technical violations, that we can have some long-term sanction beds. If we didn't have this, then a lot of times it's a revolving door. They're only getting 5, 10, maybe 15 days in jail, and then they're coming back out without giving them the amount of clean time that they need, getting them engaged in treatment.
By having the long term, you're keeping them. They really could go to prison.
Yeah.
But you're saying, no, we're going to keep them here instead for 6 months. Or,
right.
Or whatever.
Yeah. So because they're not going to prison, it's a burden on our system as a whole. And so that's why the state is saying we recognize that it will be a burden if you keep them locally. That's why we're reinvesting this money back into your local population.
Now, the opportunity, because we now have staffed up to 185 beds, mm-hmm. does that come into play? Because, like, for instance, Jackson County, if they offer this to them, they can't do it anyway because they're full.
Right.
But because we have beds available, does that make it, you know, hey, this is looking good for...
Yeah, and we have the capacity to house
them. We have the
them.
Capacity to house them,
right.
Where Medford-Jackson County probably wouldn't.
Right, and so one of our challenges right now, from what I understand from the sheriff's perspective, is that getting folks trained and through the academy, get them through FTEP, and then getting them on the boots on the ground within the jail, that's a challenge right now, so it's timing. It'll take a little bit, a few months, for training purposes, but once that happens, then this will be a very viable program.
Getting like a treatment element, cognitive behavioral stuff.
Yep. Yes, they are. That is an option. This specific program is geared towards the actual sanctioning piece
okay.
of it. It's not necessarily for the treatment. The treatment is covered in the last
okay.
Pot of money, and that's for 10 beds in block 900.
Is your I think last year, or I don't know, before this, I was talking about wanting to broaden that treatment to the female population as well.
You know,
there might be some.
We see value
positive,
in that.
Yeah.
We see a lot of value in that. The infrastructure that we have in place, I don't know that it's possible.
Yeah,
but we
that's
can start,
the limitation,
yeah,
right?
Space. Yeah, we could start having those conversations maybe.
Isn't that a bummer? That, but for space, maybe, we could probably provide the balance or something.
That'd be a good conversation to
okay.
start with, maybe Lipsick and the sheriff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some building changes at the jail that the sheriff has talked about that would help them utilize the second floors of some of those pods better.
Oh, yeah.
And if that were to happen, then they could potentially rework some things, but until that happens, they kind of
yeah.
have some limits.
Is there separate money for women's than men's? In other words, is there a pot of money that's strictly for the female population, or is it just lumped all together?
Yeah, it's not specific to. We've started a couple of programs that are.
We have a female governor, and they don't have a special pot of money.
We do have.
We didn't delineate. We could use all 10 beds right now for women. We don't have to use them for men.
Forget I asked.
Yeah, that's a challenge. That's a challenge to mix populations like that in a secure treatment facility. But
here's your coffee. What's going to happen when you have some of that?
I don't know. We'll see, won't we?
I guess so. Stay tuned.
So the downward departure, downward supervision for community corrections, again, we're receiving a one FTE at a tune of $178,000. Victim services, again, the state is investing into victim services, so they got another 10% out of the supplemental at a tune of $104,000. So a total of over $1 million for the supplemental, which is just fantastic. We're very happy about that. So if you lump all this together, sheriff's office is getting a little over $1 million. DA's office is getting two FTEs, two prosecutors for 400,000. Community corrections is getting 2.5 FTEs, 417,000. Women's crisis support team is getting 156,000. Ivy Safe House, 67,000. Welcome Home Oregon, 100,000. The Josephine County Courts, 10,000. I removed the RCT 35,000 back to the state just so it's clear that this is the amount of money that we're getting here in Josephine County at $2,205,308.13.
Just a question. I had a couple of gentlemen in my office the other day. They were mediators.
Oh.
And their statement was that if for instance, two people in the court system decided to go to mediation rather than to trial, that their rate of success of keeping them out of the court system is like 60 to 70%.
Oh, for civil court, not criminal court.
In civil court, yeah, not criminal court. But is there any mediation that goes on in criminal courts at all, or not?
So the one thing that we do pre-trial that's tied into downward departures is that we see them for the defendant assessment report. We're doing the assessments. It's a non-judge.
So you're determining whether to negotiate with them or not.
No, the district attorney's office does that with the defense attorneys. The negotiation goes through the attorneys.
We're
assessments.
Right. So the defendant assessment report provides us an opportunity to provide a recommendation to the district attorney's office on how to proceed. And so we are engaging the offender population before the actual sentence happens and before even plea bargain happens and plea negotiation. So those recommendations are happening for this specific population.
Has the court notification rolled out yet, or are we waiting for these dollars first?
We're waiting for the dollars first, yeah. As far as I know, I think the infrastructure is in place. A lot of the research has been out there. In fact, I think they're planning to partner with Multnomah County, who already has this up and going, for the $10,000. That's the one you're
That'll referencing. Be one to see how the numbers change, yeah, and if it has an impact on our failure to appear rates in this county, which seem to be very high.
Yeah. So the last slide that I have here is to show what we have done since the course of justice reinvestment in recent years. And as you can see, we are fourth on the list overall for our improvements on justice reinvestment initiatives. And the only counties that are ahead of us now are very large counties, Marion, Multnomah, and Lane. And now you can see Josephine County is number four. Last month, we were number five. We've jumped up to one slot. So very, very proud of that that outcome measure, and we're hoping to improve it as well with these funds.
Well, that's incredible, because the only counties ahead of us are the three big ones. So,
yeah,
I mean, and even that you've beat some of the other ones, that's incredible.
Yeah, we're hoping to maintain that downward trend, so stay tuned. So before you today is our request for the board to sign the grant agreement with the State of Oregon Josephine County Community Corrections for Justice Reinvestment Program. Of note, there was $23,000 carryover funds from last biennium that Welcome Home Oregon wasn't able to spend at that particular time. And so we're asking that those funds be carried over and then allotted back to Welcome Home Oregon so they can spend those funds for transitional housing. So the total amount is $2,228,776 if you add in the $23,468 carryover. So that's our request today.
Excellent. Really good news.
Thank you.
I would like to point out that I know Director Gowron said it, that the first portion was based on the percentage of the pie that we get, the 2.99. But the competitive portion, the additional $1.1 million, was largely in part because of Director Gowron's efforts. Without the effort that he put into this, it went through Lipzig. We gave our blessing. He did all the legwork. He did every bit of it, advocating. And I even had some of the CJC say, we thought he'd actually show up at our voting session and be out the window saying, give us money.
I almost did. I had a scheduling conflict, or I would have.
You campaigned.
He deserves the credit for that $1.1 million additional funds, and you did an outstanding job,
sir. Thank
you. It needs to be recognized.
Thank you. Any questions about that?
It does, yeah. We'll move that forward.
Would you like me to make this same presentation in next week? Okay.
If possible.
Okay. I
appreciate that. It's not an
good
easy
PR.
Session, so.
Yeah.
I think what next comes to mind is staffing as a result of this and facilities. You've got some plans.
We do have some plans right now, Commissioner. We have been working with facilities. They've made some proposals. They end up hiring a consultant as an architecture come in and do some designs. At this time, we're not wanting to build on or add on, but we have some plans in place. In fact, they've already started the construction to add two offices within our building, and so that will accommodate the folks that we're going to be hiring.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
well, I know his biggest challenge, Ryan and I, we chat almost every day, is getting qualified people who are willing to do smaller projects right now. Unfortunately, or fortunately, the economy is doing so well, nobody's interested in the little stuff. So we're having to do a lot of it in-house, which, if you can imagine, we've got a limited staff and facilities for them to accommodate. So I just wanted to say that so that we understand and appreciate a little bit of patience. But if it takes you a little while to hire, maybe that would be...
Yeah, we
maybe everything comes together at the right time.
There's been a few final offers contingent on background and psychological testing and the so on and so forth, and so we have a couple of more people that are going to be coming on board December 11th, and then we have a contingent offer out there already for another PO, but the time frame for facilities to be completed for the two additional offices is fairly soon.
Okay.
And we're pleased with what they're offering at this time.
It's framed out.
Yeah.
Electrical's in. They're close.
I don't want to belabor the topic, but if there's a need for additional space at any time, we have about 10,000 square feet in the justice side, which you guys would qualify to be able to use in that secure location probably pretty easily. Oh. And those are almost turnkey, maybe a new coat of paint style. I just toured those again last week, and that's a really underutilized section of the Justice Building. And I know all of your programs probably work very well hand in glove, but if there is something that doesn't have to be right there, it's not that far of a walk. You might consider that, even on a temporary basis.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. I think free of charge, at least for a little while. That'll be the way it goes. So this is great. We'll be, I guess, moving this forward if that's necessary, and we'll address it next week.
Okay, I'll plan to present Wednesday at 9 in the hand basket.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
So much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it, Mr. Gowron. Item number B is juvenile justice, proclaiming Juvenile Justice Department property tobacco-free and vape-free. It's so funny. I can hear Rosemary's words in my head, from 7 years ago. County property and currently utilizing the Juvenile Justice Department. So
I saw you out there yesterday.
And, I was out there yesterday, yeah.
And show and tell.
We have props.
That's just gross.
This is 1 hour at Juvenile Justice.
I thought you were bringing us candy.
I know, right?
You can eat those if you want. I don't think it'll give you the same buzz.
This was yesterday here.
Yeah.
One hour here yesterday. Found a lighter that was partially taken apart in the back. Stuff
find
in
any When I'm rolling around out there, I usually find a couple of tickets at the city police.
No, I didn't see those.
I call, see ya. You have a roll call. told someone in the audience, you dropped this, you know? That's crazy.
No, didn't you find a needle yesterday, too?
I did, yes, right on the front step.
So while we were still wrapping up our meeting next door, I saw Heather out on the front steps.
We were wrapping up and they were shooting up, huh?
Sadly.
And commissioners, good morning.
Good morning.
You all know Heather.
I don't believe I've met.
So
happy morning, Danby.
So Heather Ackerman is the county.
I apologize.
The county tobacco coordinator, which recently moved, as you know, from public health, and is the newest addition, really, to the Josephine County prevention team. Prevention is the newest addition, subset of juvenile justice. So we're really happy to have her on, and she came and. Gave this pitch to me, and we would like to, and I'll let her take the mic here and explain everything to you all, but juvenile justice would be, we think it's very appropriate that if this happens, we realize that the decision is at the board level, mm-hmm. but it would really make sense if there's a kickoff to a tobacco-free policy on county grounds, that it be the juvenile department. That just makes sense to us. So, and I'll let Heather talk about.
You can smoke before you're 21 now, right? Oh, wait.
So a few of the things that I wanted to talk about, feel free to interrupt me if you have questions too. I brought a lot of data with me, but our core values state that we value people in our community and that the reason for our mission is to make sure that we're taking care of them and that we offer healthier environments for everyone that's here and for people who are visiting here. So I think that's why it's so important that we make the Juvenile Justice Center campus tobacco-free and vape-free, because we're sending that clear message that, yes, we do care. Yes, we know that we have other people coming onto this property. We have kiddos that come in. They don't need to be walking through toxic clouds of smoke or vape smoke that's there. So it'll promote a healthier outcome for everyone involved. The benefit to being on the prevention team at Juvenile Justice is having the support of Jim and also my direct supervisor, Sean, in getting a policy put in place that helps protect also the youth that will be coming into the detention center in January. So we're going to have quite a few new staff members and youth that are there, plus more people visiting our campus. And having that policy in place would protect them in the detention center, show positive role modeling, and it's using an evidence-based strategy to help show them that smoking and vaping is no longer a socially acceptable thing to do and that there are health risks involved with it. So in 2014, Josephine County alone had $56.9 million in medical costs just from tobacco-related illness. And they had $45.6 million lost due to people calling out sick from work because of tobacco-related illness and in unfortunate instances dying from tobacco-related illness. There were 14,700 adults who regularly smoked cigarettes in Josephine County in 2014, and 5,580 of them had a serious illness caused by tobacco use, and we lost 286 people that year. The reason that number is important is because the last 3 years, that number has steadily climbed. So before, we would fluctuate, we'd have less, we'd have more, it would even out, but the last 3 years, it's gone up, 2% increase, from 2014 to 15, and that took us up to 292 deaths, and then it went up almost 9% in 2016 to 317 deaths, and that's all information from the Oregon Public Health Assessment Tool. Tobacco use on our campus, just to give you an idea, we have people that will stand on the sidewalk that's right in front of our campus, and they will throw their cigarette butts into the gravel that's right by the front windows, by the front door. They'll throw it into the bark on the side next to the street side, and then also over by where the parking area is at. They stand next to the door, even though there's a 10-foot rule, and they'll smoke or vape right in front of it, so people are walking through that. If it's inclement weather, they all kind of huddle underneath wherever they're not going to be affected by that, which also pulls it directly in the building because that's an automatic door. So any smoke that's outside, if somebody walks through it, goes right through with them.
I get cigarette smoke in my office from the front. Mm-hmm. So I understand that one.
So it's coming in through a vent into your office?
I'm not sure how it gets in, but because mm-hmm. I just happen to be the first office in the hallway, if people are smoking out here, I smell it in my office.
So there's a ventilation duct out there, so if they're smoking by it, it's pulling it right into your office. Yeah.
Lovely.
This is why it's also illegal to do that under Clean Air Act, and the rules change for that, but people still do it by the exits. creating the tobacco-free properties and campuses, like I said, is an evidence-based practice. It's been known to reduce tobacco consumption and exposure to secondhand smoke. But it also helps people who are trying to quit or who have quit for an extended period of time to stay that way, because sometimes the trigger is seeing, smelling, hearing somebody do that task of lighting up or whatever they're doing can be a trigger for a person, and it's difficult to break that chain of getting off of tobacco because it's so difficult to rid yourself of it. I brought some other documentation, too, that I kind of wanted to show you, but I know that a big issue was additional resources. We're not asking for any additional resources or funding. We're working on a tobacco-free and vape-free downtown policy, and I'm actually working with the city council for that. So if that goes into effect, the city police department would be an enforcement agency for that policy, which means they would also help cover the bus stop that's down here, the whole area where we have most of our issue with people sitting on the steps and smoking at Ambassador. So that would be helpful. But also self-enforcement seems to be popular throughout different cities. So I've recently spoke to city managers in Ashland, Roseburg, Eagle Point, Central Point, and I even called the city manager of Indianola, Iowa, because they had a huge success rate with their policy for doing the same thing. And they all said the exact same statement. Posting the signage, educating people, and having people in the community invested in what's going on, what that social change actually is, helped them to be successful in the policy, because then they took ownership. If they saw somebody doing something they shouldn't be doing, hey, did you know that's not allowed here? Can you please go somewhere else? And people would generally move. So I asked about citations in those areas and what that looked like over the last few years. And for the most part, 3, 4, 5 different citations for an entire population, they said it was minuscule. It was next to nothing. They didn't have an issue with it. Once they educated people and let them know that's not okay, it's unhealthy, we're trying to help you, we're trying to promote healthier areas, people went along with it. They didn't seem to have a problem.
You said the city police would be enforcing, and they're...
If it's a municipal code, yes. If they put it in,
so they would have to... I just hate to say the county's adopting something that requires the city police to respond when we have no authority.
No. It's a separate thing that I'm working on.
Okay, I'm going to go to the root of the problem. Where do they get the money for the cigarettes? They get it for the Oregon Trail card. I think we need to petition the state that when they go to buy cigarettes on an Oregon Trail card, it gets kicked back.
So to clarify, it's not the Oregon Trail card food stamps that's paying for it.
It's
the TANF that's their housing and living
expenses. They get a housing and they can buy anything they want on it. But if you swipe and cigarettes is on the tally, because everybody's doing the wand thing now, says, I'm sorry, those are not covered. Mm-hmm. And have them quit paying for it, and because most of these folks are, I don't know where they get the money. I don't even speculate. But if they don't have the finance to do it, and it is no longer paid for by you and I, mm-hmm. that's another incentive to quit. Because I quit smoking back in 1972 when cigarettes were very cheap, and I quit smoking. I was 2 packs a day, 74, and I quit because my dad was up here in the hospital with a heart attack, and Dr. Brandis said, and you could smoke in the waiting room back then. And so I lit up a cigarette, and Dr. Brandis came in. He was a brand-new doctor, and he says, you want me to get a bed next to your dad in there? That is the worst thing you could possibly do to your body. And I said, well, I've been meaning to quit. He took my cigarettes out of my pocket, threw them in the garbage can, took the cigarette, snuffed it out, and he said, go and put that lighter in the drawer and never smoke again. I never did. Never smoked again. But I made a deal with my wife that I take the money that I used to spend on cigarettes, and when I got enough, I was going to buy a new dirt bike. And I did. I had incentive to quit because I wanted a new dirt bike, and I did. I bought a brand new Yamaha. But I think you take away the money from the state level, and you go up to DHS, and they're, oh, no, we can't do that. We don't want to raise any, you know, we don't want these people to rebel and start storming the gates. But I think that's one of the places you need to start, and you could really make a difference there, because I have an issue standing behind somebody in the store, and they buy cigarettes, and they go, let me swipe this. And I go, I just bought your cigarette? Yeah. I said, I don't like that. I said, well, too bad. And they walk off. And I don't like that. So it grinds on me. So if you could maybe look towards that, I would love a report back, see what DHS says.
Absolutely. And I know also with Blue Zones in the area, I'm currently working on a committee where one of the things we're trying to do is get the amount for a pack of cigarettes raised, because we know that the higher the amount is, less susceptible people are to buy it if they don't have money.
And I would go along with that, but the higher the amount is, the more DHS will give them. They'll go in and say, hey, my cigarettes just went up a buck a pack. I go, okay, we'll give you another $40 a month. You've got that end at the state that mm-hmm. wants clientele. If they had less clientele going through their door up there, they need less FTEs in a smaller building. They don't ever want to do that. So they're going to give out as much as they possibly can. I think we need to go to the legislature, as Jim Doherty did. He was in our freshman class at AOC. And didn't he get that? He got that 21 and under, Commissioner?
Yep.
21 and under, that you don't sell cigarettes to 21 mm-hmm. and under or whatever.
It's called Tobacco 21 was the effort yep. of the legislation.
Yeah, and so he's a huge advocate, and if you needed help at the state level, he is not mm-hmm. afraid to walk in and say something.
Okay.
So I think that's one of the things that needs to happen, and I do say...
Bring it to us, who's on the health committee at AOC, and we advocate for those things.
So. Perfect.
That works. I can do
Take
that.
Take it to Commissioner Morgan, who's on the
welfare
committee at the AOC.
Okay, so we'll move this forward. It's an administrative item, and we'll get it on next week's weekly business session.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Would you like a presentation
yes,
then?
Yep.
Okay.
That'd be super. Bring your visual aids too.
I can do that.
That's the part.
Thank you so much.
I thought those were little Tootsie Rolls or something. Hey, that's going to be great.
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item number 1C is Assessor Intergovernmental Agreement. I apologize for making you wait, Connie. I don't do that.
Interesting conversation.
What an error. So in practice, we don't put elected officials there first on the agenda.
I was wondering
apologize.
That, too.
So,
okay. But I would like
just,
to hear about those
then
kinds
it's
of...
Just no, we really appreciate what you do, and you've got an important issue before us.
So,
Connie Roach.
So just a little background on this is that actually twice a year, spring and fall, we get ORMAP grants from the state, and what it is that the state is wanting us to digitize the whole of Oregon for mapping, and so it is a mapping project, and the FTE, in the early days, we were kind of going with just getting the minimum, because you can ask for, I think recently it's around $11,000, and you can get that automatically. And we were doing that for a lot of years, but a lot of the counties are way ahead of us. Some have completed their projects, so there's not as much competition for the funds anymore. So we're able to ask for more, and we got everything awarded to us that we asked for, which covers one of our staff. So that staff person is fully funded, and that's his function is to work on the digitizing of our maps. And the chart shows us the progress that we've made over time and where we plan, so that we're really planning in the next 4 years that we're going to be 100% complete. We're getting towards the end of the process. And so this grant is just a continuation grant to get us for the next year's funding. And we
what
really
was the funding last year?
Do you remember what it was?
The last few years, it's been about $45,000 a year
okay.
to cover the 1.8 FTE. There's a spring and a fall grant cycle. And so the fall grant cycle, which is what we're in right now, funds that position.
Yeah.
Spring grant covers the control point data that we contract with a local Peter Allen surveying to collect. So it's a two-pronged approach. This doesn't show any of the control point funds. It's just the mapping part of it. So the plan has been since I've been here to collect about $90,000 a year mm-hmm. to put towards the effort on those two prongs.
I'm sure this graph could be explained in a way that makes sense, but as a percentage mm-hmm. accomplished in any given year being greater than what you needed to do to get it all done, do you see what I'm saying? It's not... So in 2014, you had mm-hmm. accomplished what I see is like 110% of planned or the total project. The line doesn't delineate. I see the line. What's mm-hmm. the outcome?
Well, off to the right there.
You're on this side. So
yeah.
This is the number of maps.
Okay.
And yeah. the line is your percentage completed of the total.
I don't know how else it could be delineated, but it seems a little like
yeah.
you guys are
but
kicking
yeah.
it out of the park every year, and you're still falling short of getting it done.
No.
It seems interesting.
So on the right-hand side, it
yeah,
says 40. Okay, all right.
Yeah. And so you can see...
It could just be misleading.
But, and you see with the numbers.
You're doing really well, and you're still every year we're going.
Well, see, in 14.
Maybe you're working on the wrong project. No, it's great. I get it.
I know. But in 14, 162 maps.
Yeah.
And part of that was because that's when we kind of geared up on how much we were able to process. Before that, we were doing a smaller amount annually. So,
are you guys working from like east to west? Or are you doing the easy ones first, and the last two or three years are going to be really challenging?
No, the hardest parts is done, which was the city of Grants Pass.
Okay.
And so, and then the surrounding areas, Cave Junction and Selma area were tough.
Yeah.
Those are actually wrapping up as we speak. So, we basically divided it up based on what we could do in a year and what we could fund.
So what is the mapping exactly? I mean, you guys have been going through this with us for a while.
Yep.
But I'm not sure, like, where's the nexus of the surveyor? Are they going out for corner points and making sure that they're where they're at and that they're delineated electronically correctly?
That's exactly right. So it's a two-step process. One is, before we can make the map, we have to have good GPS coordinates. And it's all based on state guidelines and what, you know, and accuracy levels.
What is the degree of accuracy that we should be able to assume when we get this done? Or will it always be refined over time?
We actually get much better quality than what the state requirements are. Okay. Peter Allen is very much a stickler. And, you know, the state standard, to answer your question, I can't remember the exact number, but it's plus or minus 3 feet is what I believe it is.
I think
and so to have a surveyor go out and collect data points and tell them, well, as long as it's plus or minus 6 feet, or 3 feet, excuse me, we're good. I mean, that doesn't go for a surveyor. Any good surveyor would say, that's ridiculous.
That's two rows of plants.
Yeah. That's right. So we get high quality control, and we get much more than we actually need. And so it's going very well.
And when we were doing the city, we had the city surveyor who was able to do a lot. He was going out and doing the control points, and then we kind of integrate that into our system. So
once this is done, you say in 4 years you should be complete. Is there any maintenance after that?
There always will be, because every time people are subdividing property, lot lines are changing, people are combining properties, dividing properties, that's all going. And there's new surveys that maybe change something. For, you know, like, for example, one of the weird things we had happen this past year was when we were doing that digitizing, we looked at that property that the county was getting ready to sell.
Yes.
And one of the descriptions for that was the center of the river, was part of the legal description, which is often happens near a river, center line of the river.
There's a lot of that Applegate River.
And the river moved in such a manner that we lost acreage to the other side. So things like that can happen.
Yeah, Jerry Noble says he has no idea what he has out there till winter's over, because the Applegate shifts back and forth. And he gains some years and loses other years.
Yep.
So.
For other reasons, he gains some.
Yeah.
Well, this is great. Really appreciate you guys working on this in a diligent fashion. It looks like it's been a labor of love, actually, to get it to a point. But how great for the constituents to be able to kind of look at something digitally and have a pretty good assurance of where what it says is pretty close.
Yeah, it's one of those projects that doesn't get a lot of press, and it's kind of one of those things where people go, well, who cares? But until you actually need the information and you start, you know, if you're working with people who are land professionals, it's a big deal to people like that.
Absolutely.
But to a lot of folks, it's not. But it's good to at least, you know, bring it before you, let you see it, remind you we're still doing it, and the finish line is in sight. So.
It'd be nice to have Sean Hall do an article on it or something.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's going to sell a lot of papers. But.
You know, he needs stuff to fill that paper up from time to time.
Yeah, that's true.
It gets pretty weak from.
Well, thank you very much.
We're
just looking for this probably on the consent calendar, as it's just an ongoing issue, and we don't need anyone specifically to speak to it. I think I can cover it pretty well.
Thank you very much.
If that's
you.
Okay.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. Item number 1D is Human Resources request for approval to move forward in process for policy revision change. Item number D2 is discussion on county property management position. Hopefully you brought us a job description and a salary range. I apologize, I was delegated by the board to sit down with JJ and Arthur and go over that, and I just haven't had a chance since we met on Tuesday?
It's we met blurry. This week, right? Tuesday, right. I think.
Tuesday. So So I just haven't had a chance to do it. But it's not rocket science. I'm inclined to be conservative and split the baby is where I'm coming from, but I want to see the dollar amount. I don't want to get a subject. I'm on D2, if that's okay,
sure.
Real quick.
Oh, we can jump into that.
Yeah, to talk about, I don't want us to be uncompetitive and looking for a really important person in the mix. I mean, there's so many different nexuses of where this person has input. Not so much even on what we're doing on a daily basis, but really where we're going. And I can see the job kind of morphing into, you know, being a consultant for everybody here, talking about where we want facilities to change over time. And if we get a really qualified person, I'm arguing for the 14 actually right now, discussing this. You really need somebody in-house with that expertise. And so maybe putting a little bit more emphasis in the job description on a real estate background would be positive, which might merit the higher level reflective of the job description. So does that make sense?
Where's our pool? I mean, what do you, are you talking about realtors or property management folks, like, you know, that maybe works at property management professionals or what? You know, I guess I haven't seen the job description yet. So you kind of explained it a little bit.
Well, when I've talked to legal about this, they really felt in the couple of different property managers that we've had over time, Mike and Chet and Phil. I wasn't here when Phil was here, but looking at what his role kind of was, they all brought something different to the table based on their background. So I think right now we have a really good idea of what that person needs to look like relative to the three that we've had. And I think Mike served us really well in his capacity to move the sales through. And I wouldn't say we're done with those. We're certainly not. But the pig in the python has been reduced by a couple hundred, at least 150 different properties, which is...
And you'll run out of that. There isn't a constant inventory. It's kind of like
being
in the scrap metal business. After you've mined a community, you've mined them.
We're looking to acquire three more, and there's still 12 from the last sale. We've talked about the Rogue River Highway one. So if we get three and we had 12 and plus one, we're at 16, 17 properties that will be on the spring sale. So that just kind of goes for a while. Most counties have, you know, probably we're looking at maybe one sale next year, maybe two. But
I'd like to bring something to your attention that's loosely on topic. Klamath County up at AOC was talking to me about how they address transition housing for their community corrections department. And they have utilized foreclosures, that if there's one that is a foreclosure that would be appropriate for transition housing to assist, and that is still a need that our community corrections, they do not have transitional housing for females.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to put that little seed out there that if in this process something comes up.
Do they do the upgrades? Because you can't just put people in any place. You'd have to do the upgrades on it. And
they cover
foreclosures
the cost for that stuff. It's
rare that we acquire something. D Street is the only one that I'm really... I mean, we may have had others that had, but they're out, and
yeah,
they're mobile homes that are not.
Yeah.
You know, it would be substantial. D Street was the one that I thought that we had recently that could have fit that bill. So it's rare that we come in...
It will be rare, but I want to throw it out there as something to keep in mind.
Yeah. That one might have worked really well. I don't know.
And as the sales go down, this is, you know, so one of the reasons why it was suggested that potentially the property management and facilities kind of merge as a partnership is, you know, or is it makes sense to have two different departments managing properties that belong to the county? And that might be discussion down the line to see what is the best fit for those, but... I don't know that it's a today thing.
I can say about this position today, full-time property management, period. Over time, as they get the bevy down, it doesn't necessitate that. There is a consistent amount of work. We have tons of leases that they look at, and we have regular properties that we acquire through foreclosure. So I think long-term plan is something that Commissioner Hare looked at, is what's the long-term viability of the position, but really, we have steady full-time work for 2 to 3 years of just getting through this bevy of properties.
Yeah, they're still not done. And actually, the last ones will be some of the most challenging. Mm-hmm. They'll fall under that threshold of the $15,000 where they can just be divested without having to go to auction. And oftentimes, they're just marketed to the neighboring people for, you know, you want this a third of an acre, it doesn't change your zoning or anything like that. And those are going to be the cumbersome, you know.
Do we have an assessment of our properties along that line, or is that one of the first tasks?
Theoretically, there's probably hundreds, if not a thousand, of those little
slivers.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Mike's probably got the best assessment right now.
Okay.
But that, you know, there's different batches, different kinds of things. How much time and energy do we give up to those little slivers that nobody really, you know?
Yeah.
And some of them are tricky, finding who owns them, what's the history of them. So there's a lot of research to get rid of. And really, it's not about even making money. It's about divesting ourselves of liability.
Just getting away. Yeah, the city did that on some, vacated some alleys down in the southwest section of town, just split it up on either side and said, you want this, you can have it.
Well, and there's also lot line adjustments. When we did the adjustment at Allen Creek, we didn't move the lot lines. So we've got roads running, a new road running right through, you know, previously delineating property lines, and they're not right. They need to reflect the infrastructure that was put in there. That just takes time and energy, and there's no revenue stream associated with that.
No.
So it should have been billed to the project, and that's something that is a shortcoming of Public Works, not integrating those elements of good housekeeping into it. So I didn't mean to distract from where you're coming from, but it looks as though you've got red ink on a page that might require some discretion. So where are we at?
On?
Yeah, the job description.
So the description, I sent this some months ago, and I think the actual description the board was okay with. The question was salary. I mean, I did a wage analysis. I recommended NU14. And there's really a couple of reasons why I think that's a good number. One is there wasn't a whole lot of comps within our comparables, but there were three comps that justified that salary. The other reason why I think that's an appropriate salary is if you look at the private sector, you're going to want someone with some real estate background, so you need to have the salary high enough to attract some people with that skill set. Especially in today's market, real estate's doing really well, so it's hard to pull people away. Now, what we can tell them is, you're going to have a job that's consistent, steady, that you're not going to have the ups and downs of the real estate, and you're not going to be having to show houses at, you know, Sunday and all the crazy hours that real estate people do. So there's the advantage to our position. But to pull some of those people away and make it attractive, you need to have a salary that's commensurate with what the market shows. So I would recommend NU14 for those two reasons.
Any objections?
Where does the salary come from?
Self-sustaining office.
The sales, he gets a portion of the sales, percentage of the sales, so he has to earn his keep.
Yeah, okay. For the next 2 to 3 years, we have...
I should make sure I word that right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Or preferred pronoun is the new tendency to say. Yeah.
So for the next couple of years, it's...
General Fund or anybody else, ISF.
Okay.
Eventually, it's going to probably fall into the ISF. So I'm not a proponent of spending down what reserve we put every dime possible in there to where it doesn't cost us for a year or two. But eventually, when the revenue stream is what it was, it's going to take something. And it is just a cost of having all these properties.
Didn't you say that over a period of years its duties will diminish and maybe you go to halftime?
Whether it goes to halftime or whether we morph it into a different type of position will be something that we'll need to look at. I mean, because ultimately the workload is clearly full-time for the next 2 years, but 3, 4, 5 years, maybe not.
Yeah.
So for the foreseeable future, 2 to 3 years out, it's covered?
Yep.
Yes.
You'll be able to cover it out of sales?
Both fiscally and workload, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, looks good. Let's move that forward. What kind of action do you need on that? Is that a liaison responsibility? I can't remember. Delegated that.
We can delegate it to the liaison if you would like. That's probably the easiest way.
Well, have we already done those job description changes? Mm-hmm. Ought to be able to be done by the liaison.
Yeah.
You don't need to go to the weekly business session. They're not a matter of.
No, I move the liaison handles.
That's internal. Okay.
So
I say let the liaison have it.
I don't think we have a policy to overcome, so a motion may not be necessary. It's just an understanding.
Flags come up, you can come back.
That's really what's key, is that whenever we do something like this, that you guys are all on board. You know, any changes we do, that's just the way we need to operate.
In case we get stopped on the street.
Yeah. I don't like surprises, so yeah. I wouldn't want it to happen any other way that we don't all agree. And it's unanimous, so we'll move that forward. Thank you, JJ.
Okay.
The other item is item number D1, request for approval to move forward and process policy revision change.
I only had one that I had a question on, and it was leaving work without prior permission from your supervisor. I know there are times when a supervisor is not present and an employee who becomes ill and has to leave. With the wording as such, without having had prior permission from supervisor, if it doesn't say supervisor or designee or something like that, they would be in violation of policy just because the supervisor was gone and not able to be contacted.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can add or designate if it's appropriate.
I mean, they do need to check with somebody before they vacate work if they're going home sick, but if the supervisors, for instance, a couple weeks ago, we had a department where the director and the deputy director were gone, who would they notify? You know, there was issues.
Or it's a small department, they have one supervisor.
Yeah, so that was the only quirk that caught me, that if it would force someone to be in violation, even if it's not under their control.
Yeah, I mean, we could change that. I mean, ultimately, how you notify is depending on what the supervisor approves.
This doesn't say notify. This says prior permission from. So getting permission is a very different language than notifying.
Yeah.
So if it were notifying supervisor prior to leaving, you can send a text, send an email, whether they see it or not. But if you have to have permission, that means you've received a response.
Yeah.
So that would be my only concern with that.
Sounds good.
So process for policy is so these have all gone to all the elected officials, all the department heads. They've weighed in, made a couple adjustments. It then goes to the board.
Saw the edit of the typo on that one section.
Yeah. Okay. If you have a general, it's like, this looks okay, then what I do is I send it to the collective bargaining units because they have 14 days to say, we think that some of these recommended changes are mandatory subject to bargaining. Assuming we either bargain through them or they don't respond, it'll come back to the board for final approval. So that's kind of the timeline and process for policy changes, which is one of the reasons I try to only do these every other year because they're cumbersome. The other thing on this that warrants just clarification, most of these are housekeeping policies, legal changes, or just some recommended clarifications. One of the changes that is reflected on here is restructuring how the department director's salaries are calculated or quantified.
Before we go into that, I had a thought, and I'll lose it if I don't say it. For addressing something of a missing, an unavailable manager, the liaison is the backup, and then we go through our hierarchy of the commissioner on call and the chair. And so I don't know that the staff always understands that if your manager isn't available, your liaison commissioner is perfectly authorized to step in that position.
Yeah.
And so there should never be an excuse to not be able to check in with somebody to get that sign off. And at some point, everybody should be, somebody should be available in the chain.
I
don't think a lot of people understand that.
That in most of our departments, they would never consider contacting us because they would consider that going out of the chain of command. And that if it's not their direct supervisor, then maybe their direct supervisor's next supervisor. But unless it came from us specifically sent out to staff, giving them permission to access the liaison or to seek in that place, I would say that is counter the culture that exists with employees. And I see Director Goodwin nodding his head in agreement.
That's fine, but if he's not available, it makes them both look bad if the employee's out, and then I hold them both responsible. So it's in the manager's best interest that his employee be able to reference somebody. Because at the end of the day, if it's just happening, you're both responsible in my eyes. Mm-hmm. So
the employee could say, you weren't here, so I went to my liaison, and he's well aware of it and authorized it.
Well, and I'll give you a case in point from my standpoint, from being an employee a couple years ago when we had our director retire. I was next in line in the department certified. There may have been other managers that had worked there longer, but I was the highest ranked certified person, there was no instruction from the commissioner's office of what to do in the absence of the director. There was no communication from the BCC. We internally made choices to do, and there was no knowledge in our department that we would even consider contacting the BCC, because as certified officers, we have state law that we have to follow. And
ultimately, everybody is the responsibility of the board. So
absolutely.
I think we need to put that, if it's not in a policy,
memo?
It sure covers.
Maybe make a memo. I see what you're saying is that you need to notify the employees that that's the way you
the
want
to. The
county
knew the director retired.
Yeah.
The county knows their next hire didn't start until a couple weeks into January.
Assign somebody.
There was nobody assigned as interim director. I just happened to be
that
person.
That liaison from the board, which I've never been to community.
But they, I think,
but internally, there's not an employee that would have.
The employee doesn't know that.
Well, that was a,
I'm just giving an example of why that policy stood out to me as potentially, and I hear where the board's coming from, but in reality of culture, unless we actually talk to the department heads about that, talk to employees about that, that is not in fact what happens.
Well, and it's really the managers who need to understand that it's not a circumventing their position. It really frees them up. If they're not there, there's still coverage. It should feel like a backup as opposed to something.
And JJ's always in the building, so we can just...
Okay, great. As long as we've got that clear, somehow delineate that, maybe.
Sure. I'll look and find the best place to put that.
That'd be great. So, we asked you some months ago to take a look at, there's been so many changes, I think, in a lot of our programs. I want to reference community corrections for sure this morning, but juvenile justice, the program that Mr. Goodwin is overseeing right now is significantly different than the program that he was hired to oversee. There's still challenges, and they're just different, and I'd say that it's not just limited to those two departments. You've got parks. They've got actual resources and hiring more staff all the time. Forestry's revenues are up. That doesn't mean that just comes easier, you know, that you've doubled the amount of revenue that you're putting up and managing your asset for the county more efficiently and quadrupled the revenue. That just doesn't happen. And so I appreciate you taking this on as a task, and I think hopefully
are you asking for a review of all department heads?
We already did.
Okay.
So I have recommendations for all the department heads, and then a policy revision that's part of the policy. So because I'm recommending two things: changing where most of the department managers' salaries fall in, having a completely different salary table, unique to department directors, and then changing how we do longevity for department directors. Because I think our current system isn't a tool to help foster longevity for the directors. I think it is a good tool for everyone else, but not for the directors. So I'm recommending, part of the policy changes is recommending changing how we do that.
I want to look at that sooner rather than later, because we're in an atmosphere right now where all counties are ramping up, all counties are finding more revenue due to whatever reason, and they have the ability to go around a pirate. And I'm in my business, when there's a lot of business out there, there's a lot of pirating going on, and if I've got a super good employee, I'll be very proactive.
Sure.
And what do I do to have to keep that and know what the wind, which way the wind's blowing out there, so I don't get pirated. Josephine County, I feel, is in the spotlight for that because of just by what our managers have been doing.
Sure.
And the results, you talk about deliverables, they are delivering. And we need to recognize that. And, you know, because other than that, we could essentially, the people that got us here can be pirated away from us.
Absolutely.
Finance is probably the only department that just continually just gets that silly award every year. You know, they're really the underperformer in the county. But you're absolutely right, Commissioner DeYoung. There isn't just because he's in the room, thank goodness. I've probably used him anyway. There isn't a program, I'd say, that doesn't have statewide notoriety
exactly.
Right now.
Every one of them is coming
doing
back.
Phenomenal.
Fairgrounds is coming back with awards. You know, Nate was just in here. Super, you know, and we got Jim. We got everybody.
Yeah,
everybody's
involved. Doing stuff. Yeah.
Looking 10 years back at 2008 to 2010, it was a whole different place to work here when you came to work.
Yeah.
And now that it's on the swing, there's a lot of people that have been here with a lot of hard work and a lot of sacrifice to get it to where Commissioner Morgan and I can step in and say, wow, this is really something proud to
work for. Well, I used to go around the state and I'd explore every program. I even tried to steal Coos County's forester, who was kicking butt over there. And don't you know, he got a $12,000 raise the next week because of the fact that I was willing to pay him what Vic was making when he walked out the door. I said, I got X, and I'll pay you X tomorrow to do that kind of a performance and revenue generator over there. And
did Coos not appreciate that?
They didn't. They hold it against me.
I was never happy because, you know, sometimes there would be a company in Medford that wanted to come. I said, what are you doing? You want me to pirate your people?
Yeah, right. I did just not... Yeah, the right way to do it.
But it happens, and that, it does. And we're government. We're still from the business side of it. Money's money.
And it costs money to replace some of these people.
Oh yes,
a significant amount.
Way more than it retention.
Yeah,
retention is huge.
So
I'm not willing to do these just based on work. We have incredible staff, which is awesome, but I also want to see a measurement component in this and a achievement level of it's not just because you sat in a chair that there's actually, you know, it still needs to be tied to evaluation or something else like that.
So my recommendations is based on statistical comparable analysis. So that's where I'm making my recommendation on. What I would say is if you have a department manager who you feel is deserves to be paid over their comps, there's a number of ways that we can address value-based performance. We have a system in our policy that will give the ability to offer people bonuses for their performance, and it's, you know, based on quantifiable stuff. We can, at the board's discretion, give people a two-step increase instead of a one-step increase if you think they're overperforming. There are some counties that for certain department managers they overpay than their comps, and so now I'm a big proponent. I always make recommendations to put the 5th percentile, and that's what this recommendation does. But just because that's my recommendation as the HR director and that's my standard methodology doesn't mean that the board can say, well, we think that this department manager is a super performer and we want to overpay for that person because we think that there's merit to that. There's a cost to that across the entire organization, but the board has the prerogative to do it if you choose. So the recommendations, I'm making recommendations of some changes. It's based primarily on quantifiable data that I can justify to anyone in the world.
The numbers are justified.
Yeah. And we can look to do more or less than that depending on the board's discretion.
Commissioner Morgan, I don't want to assume that I understood what you were talking about, so you may need to provide clarity on where you want to refine what his proposal is and what your basis and criteria, because I'm not tracking.
I said two different things, so I understand why you don't track. That's not your fault. The wage study and the range is justified to be adjusted, but I don't want us to ever be lackadaisically giving advances or step increases without making sure that it's earned, is, I guess, my point.
Okay, so what he's proposing is reflective of comparables and statistics. It doesn't really take into account the person in there. I think you get that as a benchmark or parameters, and then the board has the discretion to assign that. I haven't really taken a look at it.
I think JJ's been very clear that this is his recommendation,
and
that the board, I think you've given us a half a dozen examples of how, if you thought you had an overachiever, that you could adjust for that.
Absolutely.
Most of the time, board members don't do that. We take what we get as far as the range, and rarely, okay, maybe never, has it ever really gone outside of that.
As a former employer, I may tend to do that.
Okay.
Because I've lived it on both sides of it.
You may want to take advantage of those?
I may want to take advantage of those.
I think what's really probably...
But it would be up to the board. I would have to justify that.
What I would recommend, if a commissioner feels I have one of my liaison departments that's overperforming, come talk to me. We'll put a proposal and say, I recommend X, and we'll take that proposal to the full board.
You're not an elected, so you wouldn't understand. You'd never use overperforming. Exceeding expectations,
yeah.
I think that's what you actually
yeah, that's
want to
what
call
I mean.
It. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, overperforming? No.
That's a negative.
That's reserved for the commissioners.
See, and I... I'm of the expectation that if you perform at this level, you've now set the standard that that's the level. Yeah. So my expectation is you increase that level.
It is really true. I mean, people who do great work really set the bar. And so, well, let's take that. Do we your recommendation for a week and revisit this for something next Thursday? Is that what you're suggesting? Or
so policy revision.
You're good.
You guys have said go forth. I'll send it to the I'll send it to the unions. The director part of the policy is immaterial to the unions because they're not. They're not unionized. So
then you had a step element. You were refining the range and it had a longevity.
Yes.
Do you want to review that?
So I have. I'm recommending we use a different salary structure for directors. So
that's really not. I'm sure it's probably benign, but I don't know what that is, and that's, you know what I mean. You can't just do that in a meeting.
It's fine. I can read it out loud if you like.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I don't know what it is. So if you're deliberating towards something that's on.
I wasn't asking for a response from him. I just gave him an opinion.
Can't do that. That's actually against the law. So, it's not necessarily just for the public. It's the other commissioner that's left out. So I don't know what you're deliberating towards or what kind of information you just shared, but you really can't do that. So.
Okay. Well, I mentioned that an employee should get a bonus or be considered for a bonus.
Excellent.
So.
Which employee?
Nate.
Great. I think that's really something the board should take into consideration.
And I responded as his liaison that that's we're already working on.
Great.
JJ and I had a conversation.
Good. Okay. So bring it back to the director salary structure. And I mentioned this, I think, at the last meeting as well. I would recommend changing the structure of the director salary. So instead of having a 9-step scale, having a 6-step scale, I think it's more appropriate for the purpose of salaries is to recruit and retain. And the structure that we have for the rest of the county is basically standardized within a union environment. So you get hired, you work your way up over a number of years, and you become a journeyman X. Well, I don't hire directors to build their way up to journeyman director. They're already directors. I do see some value in steps. Personally, I'm a better HR director today than I was 4 years ago, so I'm now mediocre. And so I think that structure... I figured I'd say it before Mr. Hare got to me. I set myself up nicely. So I think that structure is more appropriate for directors, and I also think our longevity system, for a good portion of our directors, doesn't foster longevity. It rewards people who stick around, but... If I hire a director who comes from the outside, the average age of our directors when they're hired is 52. They're not going to be here 20 years in all likelihood. So giving them the option of here's this thing if you stay 20 years, it's a carrot that's not really a carrot because they're not likely to be here when they're 72. They might be, but probably not.
And if you do have somebody, what's the carrot for them after 7 years and they're topped out?
Yeah.
And the rest of their life, that's where they're at.
So. For the directors, based upon how we hire directors, I'm recommending changing. I value the longevity. I think there's merit to it, but changing how it's structured.
Okay.
And so instead of doing it 10, 15, 20, they would be eligible for each step once they get to the top of the range, after 3 years, 3 more years, and 3 years after that. And that basically puts, if they get hired at step one, they'd be at the top of their scale within 13 years instead of 20. And it has a carrot. Like, instead of having to wait 8 or 9 more years until you get a pay increase, you can say, well, 3 more years and I'll give you some more money. And that's an actual carrot, and I think that they would be considered.
Do you have any statistics about how long our managers end up staying? And because I've hired every manager we have minus 2. So you can just say that in 7 years, and I probably did most of them in 6, and they stay. I mean, they've stayed. Everybody's pretty much minus planning. Community development,
it's a tricky wicket.
That's an anomaly. But everybody else, I think, has been so, I don't know,
I haven't done an analysis on that.
This could kind of fit and say, with this, most employees, managers, when they're hired in this, are going to depreciate this scale. They're going to make it work. Or, no, this is actually too long, or it's too short, or it's just right. I think it feels like it's actually very close to just right.
I think that it's a better structure than what we currently have.
hope that's a relevant question.
And I could say that the longevity structure that I'm proposing is fairly unique. Most counties just go with the years, and I think that years works great for most line staff workers, but I don't think it's a good tool for directors.
That's appropriate, I think, Ryan, if you want to. How did the managers, have you presented this in a manager's meeting?
Mm-hmm. They were very supportive.
Ryan, come on, if you have something.
No, I just wanted to throw out there that in years past that managers, directors, there was a sellback option for lead time because a lot of our directors and managers don't use it. Where our staff is able to take more time off.
Yeah.
And since we're looking at the whole package, maybe we need to look at that again.
We capped that at like 1,200 hours or something. Yeah. It was capped.
Yeah, and I know myself, I mean, I'm running up against the cap, and it's just going to go away.
You're just losing it.
Yeah.
It really isn't fair.
It's not fair. So since we're looking at the package, maybe that's something that should be looked at.
That's why they tell you you have to take a vacation because nobody's going to give it to you.
Yeah.
I think Rosemary's point was that payout liability growing as a fiscal element, not a necessarily totally reflect the work and everything that you're doing, but at some point it's that, oh my gosh, we can't afford for that person to leave. Their payout is, you know, 2,300 hours, and it's going to break the bank. Well, and how do you put that as a reserve in every budget that you?
Well, we have a cap of 300. So we
is that
they,
all?
They can yes. they can accrue 1,400 hours is the top, but they can only they're only paid out 300. So we do have some limited liability.
And I agreed to that.
That seems
so.
No, I ended up taking almost a month off before I left my position because I needed to get my time down to. I wasn't going to, and that's what you're going to see as a difference, is if he's got 1,400 hours and he can only pay out 300, he's going to take the last 4 or 5 months off of work because he can.
Well, and the kicker is that's when we need him here to train the next person.
Yep.
So
but that's
I've what, experienced that, is that they're not here, and why would they be?
We just had a 30-year employee do the same thing that wasn't management that ended up taking weeks upon, every week, it was a couple days here, a couple days to get that time down, and so we need to look at those for that side of things.
Commissioner DeYoung.
From the private sector, once again, I gave my shop foreman and longtime employees, I gave them a week paid vacation. They came in and says, okay, at the end of the year, I want my paid vacation, a check for it. I said, that is not the point of a vacation. Mm-hmm. You need to get the heck out of here, both for you and your family. Mm-hmm. The reason we give you a paid vacation is we as managers, we as commissioners, understand that you need a week off every once in a while. Get the heck out of here.
We don't actually have vacation time. We have paid time off.
It's the same deal.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the reason for that is not just a benefit, and so you can get more money in 53 paychecks a year, 54. There is a reason for a paid vacation because people that are higher than you and that have been in your position recognize that you need some time off, for Pete's sake, from time to time. You have to unwind and decompress, and you will come back from a week at Disneyland going, whoa, why haven't I done that all along? And career people like yourself that says, well, I just can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it. I'm going to tell you this, like I've told every person that's worked for me, don't flatter yourself thinking you're not replaceable. And somebody should be able to take up for what you do when you want to take 2 weeks off or go elk hunting for 11 days. Yeah. And if that can't happen, you haven't done your job.
Right.
You should have somebody, and your machine should be running flawlessly. I took off 5.5 weeks, and my wife and I drove away from a business for 5.5 weeks and never looked back. And people said, what happens if it's not there when you get there back? So what? I must not have done my job before I left. And when I came back, it was actually better than when I left because my people stepped up and said, the boss, they said, you're what? Where's Dan? He left. He'll be back in 6-8 weeks. He went to the Indianapolis 500. And he won't be back for 6 weeks. That shows confidence in your crew also. So that's the purpose of vacation. It ain't about money. Excuse me. It's not about money. And racking up the time because you think that I just can't afford to take off today.
I think it has a lot to do with the accrual rates. I don't think it's as much as, you know, that managers never take a vacation. I think we all have to take a break. Mm-hmm. But that accrual number
maybe is a little different.
So you're asking to accrue less?
No, I don't think that's
no,
what
no. But there's no point in saying, okay, managers get an extra week off a year if they can only take the same as staff off, right? So then that week just goes into your bank every year, and it keeps building.
Well, I think we need to take it into consideration in the package that we're
giving. That's all. Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
Certainly, I'm glad you brought the table.
Yeah.
The military gives you 1 month off a year. Paid vacation from the day you sign up to the military, you get a month off. Paid vacation. There's a reason for that.
Yep.
A real reason for that. And that's a month starting out right off at the bottom. That's not after you've been there. You know, when you've been there 15 years, you don't get 2 months off. You get a month. It's consistent across the organization. And there's a reason for that. The stress is just as high for a fireman apprentice down in an engine room as it is for the captain telling you where that ship's going to go. So that's exactly what it's for. It's R&R. It's rest and relaxation. And it's not about the money. So that's just one thing. I'm done on that. From the private side.
So, JJ, were you looking for approval of this today, or were you comfortable with letting us have a week?
I'm fine with having some time. Okay. We don't have to approve it today.
Good.
But I just wanted to make sure that it's not just, you know, I have a policy on whistleblowing.
No,
it's also about the structure of our directors as well.
Great.
Okay. And thank you for your input.
Oh, sure. Okay. So we're going to do the policy one just fine, and then we're going
to
do
longevity. So I'll put the policy out to the unions to see if they think that anything in there is a mandatory subject of bargaining.
Okay.
And then you all can take a look at and think about it for a week or so, and I'll bring it back.
Great.
All right. Thank you.
Real good. Thank you so much. We're getting copies, I'm sure, along that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll resend them to you.
Great. Thank you. Sorry, JJ.
No problem.
The one that you had, the scale there, I didn't, when I looked at the email, I had the one that showed the staff that we had asked for, where they're currently at.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see that one.
You didn't get the
revised I'll send it again.
Oh, yeah.
I sent it a few weeks ago, but I'll send it again.
What okay. We didn't have, and you did send, is where they were now.
Correct.
That's
and
right.
That I found.
Now I remember. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
All right. You betcha.
We've had time to look at that. I apologize.
It's not like you're not busy.
I'm okay moving forward with it, but it's... So, yeah, it's just a matter of...
Well, let's say we move it forward without objection. If somebody comes up with something before...
Or if we have revisions that we can take it up with him.
Yeah.
Like, as you said.
If that happens, you'll have to bring it back.
I want to look
fine.
At this particular
one. But I agree,
okay.
Commissioner.
But as a basis,
right.
Maybe that's what we're...
Okay, good. Okay.
We're approving the basis, what you have right now.
Yeah.
As you said, those are recommendations. They can be
yeah.
on a one-to-one basis.
Yeah.
Arthur?
Yeah. All
right.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Hare? Maybe that's too generous of a term. Mr. Finance Man.
I have to agree. I need to get Ryan up here, too, because the main thing that I'm bringing forward today is the a contract for Vitus to do the remodeling of the out at the jail, the storage area or the warehouse area remodel that to
that's in a separate building around that.
Yes, correct.
Okay, for
to remodel that for the
deputy
offices and patrol.
Room.
It's the contract is $80,000, so it's or $81,000, so it's above the $50,000 liaison department head cutoff. Ryan can give you some of the background, but what I would like to see today is just the approval by the board, probably delegation to the chair to go ahead and sign on behalf of the board and say, let's move forward with this project.
Well,
the existing vendor.
I don't know that it's a delegation for the chair. It's the facilities. It's that it's in your wheelhouse. It's not really a sheriff's thing. It wouldn't matter what office it's in. It's changing the structures and facilities.
Right.
And
true.
So,
true.
You know, that would
good
be my
point.
Argument. It's not really a chair thing or a sheriff's
or,
thing.
Or
no matter where
point,
it is,
no.
It's a facilities deal.
You're making the $81,000 improvement is to the facility.
Right.
And that's
even,
kind of
if that, even if that wasn't the sheriff out there, it would be the facility that belongs to the county.
And the money is coming from property reserve?
Property reserve, yeah.
Because it's not coming out of the levy.
Right.
The levy is the levy was for the jail, and this is not the jail facility. So that's another way to track who's responsible. It's where the money's coming from.
Right. Property reserve,
okay.
Since they've been paying into that for
so
years.
This is something we've been working on for a while, and I think Ryan's really been gracious in giving up a little bit of space that he's been using and kind of relegating to a smaller closet or mobile facilities in some situations. But for the sheriff's office and patrol, it really opens up, you know, quite a bit of square foot, and it may or may not be a long-term solution. It may not be, you know, but I think regardless, they're going to need this space for some time. And what's the time frame on when they're able to kind of get something like this? This is the only person?
Yeah, this was the only response. We actually...
Isn't that crazy?
We didn't even get calls back from multiple people. And you would think 81,000 is, you know, not a decent
all
job.
Indoor work this time of
year. Yeah. No, not even calls back.
You're not out. So.
Not even calls back. And isn't that an indicator?
Yeah. Some of the calls back that we do get, you know, are telling us we're turning down $1 million jobs. So 81,000 is really, you know, it's nothing. So, we basically used Strauss and Siebert to put some drawings together for the bid process. And that's basically what this is bid against, is the drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have an opportunity. Vitus has a small window, and they can get people on it right away.
Okay.
So that's why I'm bringing it forward, to see if we can get it going while we have the opportunity.
So I'd entertain a motion to approve this today to get it done. And
so
then
moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion to approve the $81,000 contract for the sheriff's office patrol area to be expanded and remodeled?
And the, you know, I always like to, you know, figure about 10% for change orders and so forth.
Sure.
You know, might be conservative.
So not to exceed $90,000.
Like
is that okay with the board?
Sure.
Yes.
So it's been moved and seconded to approve this contract with Vitus to a not to exceed $90,000 budget on a remodel at the sheriff's office. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries 3-0. Okay, so we'll get that done.
Thank you.
Just make sure, you know, you're going to have to move some of your stuff out of there. Make sure you don't take the wheels out from underneath that, because you might be a little mobile for a while.
Yeah. It's going to be challenging.
Well, especially because the jail facility is really his biggest client.
Oh, yeah.
In need of a lot of things. There was some conversations while you're here just talking about this. That Commissioner Morgan brought up, ongoing issue with that second floor and some of the pods, and maybe utilizing that for something for treatment. Regardless, I think we've had some need to take a look at that second floor.
Second floor of the jail,
the
upper day room areas.
Yeah, from
creating safe panels.
Liability standpoint, but also better utilization of the space. How's that conversation going? Has it...
No. Along the lines of those panels up there, so we don't have jumpers, would GIS be somebody that might want to weigh
CIS.
In on that?
Not GIS, CIS.
CIS, excuse me. CIS, would they be somebody that may want to weigh in on that, because it reduces liability?
They might be willing to kick out some funds for it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, how much liability we really have there, because everything is to code. And regardless of what we do there, they're going to find new and creative ways to injure themselves.
The idea is put some clear ballistic, shatterproof panels all the way up so they can't get over the rails.
Yeah.
Then I just thought the CIF, because they were constantly talking at conference about liability, and boy, if you see anything that could be a potential liability and harm our insurance rating,
so
we want to hear about
one
it.
One of the things that focused liability was really on performance of operations.
Her task?
No, not at all. And I think we will look into that. So I don't want to talk about the potential liabilities too much in public, but we know that there's an issue there, and we need to just address it. And I think Ryan's in a really good spot, being that where we're starting from isn't a violation of code, which is really key for a defense standpoint. But if there's
safety,
if there's incremental things that we can do over time, I think it makes sense for us to do it.
Sure. And it hasn't been a reoccurring type problem over there. We've
this
only
is kind
had
of a,
one.
A new anomaly.
That's not what we were reported to.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll just have to connect those those dots.
Yeah. Yeah, there might have been some communication issues on that.
you had a person in your office who recently passed away, and the board commemorated that passing yesterday at the weekly business session.
Thank you.
But also we'd like to do, we have the discretion within our policy to send flowers to next of kin if necessary, and a card. And so we're going to be working on that today to make that happen.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I don't know that anyone here had the privilege of meeting this person.
No. He's
been here since 2005, if I remember.
Five.
So quite a while.
He did community corrections, and he did the jail.
Okay.
What were his primary responsibilities?
Who was it?
Peter.
No! Are you kidding?
Yeah, Peter passed away. Yes. Over the weekend.
I did not know that's who did. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I've spent many hours talking with that man.
Yeah. It was unexpected.
Yeah.
Dang.
Well, we're sorry for your loss, and we'll figure out how to commemorate that as best as possible. So we have not, Arthur and I were talking, we've had people who were previous employees of the county, but I really don't remember anyone that was brought to my attention that we'd lost kind of on the job, so to speak. So,
well, I can tell you,
pretty lucky in that sense.
Peter knew if you were feeling well, if you were out of town, if he, man, he... just
paid attention.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
And he'd be concerned. He'd talk to you, and I was often there hours after anybody else, and so I was there when he was there. But wow.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, and that is all I brought.
Okay.
Unless you just want to hear me talk.
No, absolutely not. I am going to announce that under the financial element, an item. So I've shared with Arthur yesterday a preliminary memo that was sent out by Kevin Davis, who's the attorney of the ONC Association on retainer, that an argument that we've been working on for quite some time since the first appropriation of shared receipts in almost 20 years happened last fiscal year. It was a $2.2 million impact to Josephine County. A stark difference from the $13 million we used to get, but that's the appropriation that we got. It's not an appropriation, and I misspoke on purpose. That's been our argument. It's a shared receipt element delegated by Congress in 1937 that should go directly to the counties. It isn't an appropriation. It's subject to sequestration. In that fiscal year, it was 6.9%. Sequestration is agency that appropriates that. It's the government GO, it's an acronym.
GAO?
GAO, Government Accounting Offices, sequester 6.9 of all appropriations that are outside of defense, and there's certain parameters. We argued successfully, actually, that should not have been subject to sequestration. And so that 6.9% means $168,337 to Josephine County from last year's. What it will also mean a difference in how much we would have received this year going forward on another year of shared receipts. So we put in the budget for $2 million, and it's a real positive win for ONC. One of the benefits that I see is the fact that it's covering its costs. Our advocacy in D.C. is paying off, even if small amounts. If shared receipts go up in the future because of an improved resource management plan, more harvesting of timber anywhere on the ONC portfolio, we benefit in a greater sense as a result of that. So it's not just this one time. It's this year and every other year going forward. It's just the solicitor's opinions have come through, and it's a big win, even if it's incremental, in my opinion. So I just thought I'd share that as a press release just went out.
Is there a way to get a copy of the press release?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can get you that. So
nice.
Those checks should
Very
be
nice.
Coming maybe by the end of the year, if not sooner, because it was a direct GAO conversation, and they've already agreed to cut those checks soon. So just thought that I would put that out there. Any other?
I did bring.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Hara.
I do.
Item number four is board business. We have a final plat of Sand Creek Estates, Phase 1. So I think I'd entertain a motion. It's a fairly routine thing that we do. I think we need a motion on that. I think we do, yeah. So I'd entertain a motion on approving item 4A, which is final plat of Sand Creek Estates, Phase 1, brought to us by Peter Allen.
So moved.
I'll second.
Been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? We'll do John Hancock's on this at the end. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 3-0. Item number 4B is Resolution 2017-054 in the matter of appointing to the Local Alcohol and Drug Planning Committee. I know that Mr. Brumback is one of those people who's being reappointed.
No.
Appointed, isn't he?
Appointed. So there are, on LADPC, there's certain positions that are filled by outside agencies or recommendations from outside agencies, and then there's numerous members at large. John Chambers was the only representative from the Mental Health Advisory Board, and there was a request for that position to change. And so before, John Chambers was on the committee as a member at large, then they moved him over to the position of Mental Health Advisory. The Mental Health Advisory Board requested a different member, Jim Brumback, be that representative. So then the request was that John Chambers go back to a member at large. My only question about this is that there's been no calculation of dates from original appointment through moving through the different positions, so it's just that 4 years keeps kind of extending, and I don't know if that's consistent with policy or not. And so I have no objection to the three people. They both add a lot to the committee.
Great.
My concern would be making sure the dates of expiration of term are appropriate based on what the bylaws say versus that we just keep... John was member at large, then mental health, and now member at large, but the date just keeps getting extended.
They just keep pushing his date out.
Yeah, and I just want to make sure that we're in line with what the bylaws say can happen.
There's only a few. Planning is one where we have, like, term expirations set up. Budget committee is another that you're really only supposed to do two terms, but I don't know that there is one in that. It's been a long time since I've been liaison. That's something maybe we should research. Otherwise, I think it's okay.
They updated the bylaws last year. I just haven't read them recently. So I just needed a look just to make sure. I have no objection at all to the three being appointed. I think they will all serve very well.
It's just defining their terms.
Correct. And that if you guys don't object, I'll look at it before it goes to Wednesday.
Sounds good. Okay, so we'll move that forward to consent. Item number 4C is Memorandum of Understanding for Implementation of All Lands Coordination Recommendations of the Sudden Oak Death Task Force Strategic Action Plan. I know this is coming. I didn't put this on here. Is there another commissioner who did recommend? Maybe I did. I did. I bet I got an email. Okay.
I've read it. I mean, it's essentially just that we're agreeing to be a part of this, and it's not a... We all have to take care of our own stuff.
Yeah.
I don't object to us signing it as part of the coordination subcommittee, but I also don't mind that if you guys need time to look over it, that it's...
Well, I attended the meeting over in Coquille by accident, and...
Thank you very much.
Yeah, they had... there was a consensus around the table. Amy was there also from
Merkley's office.
Senator Merkley's office. Yeah. And so I'm comfortable signing it. I think it's very important. I was unaware of Sudden Oak Death and what its impact could be on these counties. It could be huge, and not necessarily from the actual damage, but from the quarantine net that's going to be thrown over Southern Oregon. It could potentially reach the Harry and David side in Jackson County, all of our vineyards here, you name it. That quarantine net is not going to be pretty. So I'm just surprised that there's only a small amount of money going towards this. I think it's something that Forest Service, U.S. Forest Service and whatnot should be really paying attention to, and also our legislation should be paying attention to.
Well, actually, in a big way. Merkley has taken a lead role on this. You're going to find there's very few times that I'll speak really positively of yeah. something where we're on the same page. But him and David Brocksmith, the state, yeah. have just really taken on... I mean, David Brocksmith is the representative of that area and yeah. a commissioner. He gets it. I think he sees there's a lot of horticulture and the cranberry. I mean, all that stuff seems yeah. to be like through the crosshairs. It's not just oak.
Not
trees.
Just oak. And that, you know, their tough thing is that they will find a small patch out in the middle of maybe on private land their hard time is convincing the people that own the land, say, we have to cut a 300-foot radius around that.
Yeah.
We have to destroy
it.
We have to destroy it and burn it right there on the spot. And people say, well, wait a minute. You know, I'm not going to allow that. Cut that one tree and get it out of here. Well, the damage is already done.
Yeah,
the spores have already spread. So,
you know, it might behoove at some point in the future that we have somebody come over. I think there's willing parties. Mark Labhart might be a good person to do it and just give a
Mark
quick presentation.
Mark would probably be he's got a good handle. He's a chair.
As in that weekly business
so
the public can see it?
Yep. Mm-hmm. So they get the, when you say sod, there's some context to it and we can refer them to something.
I would recommend that we wait until the new projectors are in. Mr. McCafferty said he would be working on that, of getting those replaced.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll
after
take
yesterday's
time.
Meeting comments.
Okay, yep, it's all good.
So, item number D, matters from commissioners.
The fair board is moving forward on their master plan and their vision of what the fairground should look like, and so on and so forth. They've got some really good. They had a really good meeting the other night and discussed a lot of things as far as the upcoming fair. There was some. Oh, I guess some reservations about entertainment at the fair last year. You know, there's a lot of complaints about where's the tractor pull and, you know, the tractor pull, and I think they've got a contract to bring that back on board. It's a possibility of a sponsor for that event. So they're working diligently out there to change a lot of stuff in the upcoming fair. Last year they had a free day, and the free day ended up being the big day, because everybody waited for the free day, and once they went, they didn't go back. So there was a suggestion made to take the amount of money that the sponsor put on for the free day and amortize that over the 4 days of the fair and just lower the price down a little bit and call the whole fair.
Oh, that'd be great. Sponsored by... Lower the ticket cost so you can get more people in.
Lower the ticket price. You know, whatever that amount is, and you would probably even things out and bring more people to the fair, and then also go from like 10 to 12 on a couple of days for children under 12 free instead of under 10. They've got a lot of good ideas they're kicking around over there to kind of change that up. Exciting to see them working.
I'd like to see that, you know, bounced off other fairs who may or may not have tried that. Was there any discussion about Sunday?
They're doing that.
Okay.
Yeah, they're fine.
Sunday, moving the fair to being open on Sunday?
They put that away, and strictly because of the livestock end of it, getting the livestock out on Monday rather than on Sunday. Sunday's all day for them to get all the livestock and clear the barns and everything and get people back, because a lot of people are students and they have to go to school on Monday. That was brought by the livestock coordinator over there. He's in charge of all the livestock and moving in and out, and he goes, I could do it, but my gosh, he says, I'd probably have people pulling their stuff out early and so on and so forth. It'd be just an absolute can of worms. So that was his recommendation. And so that for this year especially, they said they would do a Sunday fair. I agree with you that Sunday may become their biggest day if they were to do that,
I don't understand is you could just wall off with those panels that you don't see through real quickly from the rabbit barn up to the 4-H building and across to the beef barn. And that's done. I mean, there's like 10 panels, and you're walled off.
I have no idea. That's what
the
committee.
I grew up at that fairgrounds. I know every square inch, like the back of my hand. I don't see why you couldn't just say the livestock.
How well do you know your hand?
Really well. You know what I mean? You could wall off the you just don't get to see the livestock stuff. But it starts a couple of days before the fair starts. So people who are really interested in the shows and stuff, I go down there, at least I used to.
That's something I'll certainly bring up to them.
I don't like the fact that you're saying that just because one element isn't available, we're shutting the whole thing down. People aren't necessarily coming for that anyway.
If you're not available to Saturday because you work the rest of the week or something else like that, then the weekend might be that. It's not a bad idea. Yeah. What was the name of the guy on the Sudden Oak deck?
Mark Labhart. He's a former commissioner from,
Labhart?
Labhart.
Labhart.
Mark Labhart.
He gave one of our presentations at County College. Big, tall guy.
I remember the presentation. I didn't remember the person.
Yeah, I didn't either. I'd have to look at his name on the name tag. So So anyway, but they're moving forward. They're excited over there. I'm pretty happy with them. They're moving, doing a lot. I'm talked to Arthur O'Hare, and he's going to give them a kind of a quick 15-minute to half an hour thing on various avenues of revenue for the fairgrounds going forward. So so they're all on board as to where that money can come from. And that'll come up in the next, I don't think they're going to have a December meeting because of the holidays, but January meeting. So, okay, that's all I have.
Okay, great. Commissioner Moria.
No, I'm good for now.
Okay.
I did submit my note to For the Record. So
It's only when you communicate to the board members.
No, I'm saying that the note I communicated to a board member I submitted for the record.
Well, it's in the record, though.
No, technically, that's how it goes. I have a couple of things I'll go through real quick. I'm glad legal counsel's here and you can come up because we're going to move into executive session here in a minute.
Did you submit my response to along with that?
You wrote it on the same paper.
Okay, thank you.
And my understanding is the majority of the board has a pending land use decision, and we've closed off public comment. You had made a comment that the revolving door to your office is still going to be open. My estimation is that if I was a public person, you don't get to talk to any more public, neither of you.
Okay.
And so that would be an outside. What's the point of closing off public comment if all I have to do is come in and make a half an hour appointment with you, and the whole ship steers and changes? But I didn't see that. I didn't hear that.
Yep.
And there's no record of it. So,
if somebody says, I want to talk to you about it, say, no, we're done.
You can talk about marijuana. You just can't talk about the regulations relative to what's going on. So I would steer you clear of marijuana conversation for at least a week until you put a bow on it.
That would be...
It came to me last night that you shouldn't be talking about it.
That would be really peachy.
So you guys are in agreement on that interpretation? Because that's mine. It's not legal counsel's. But, boy, if I were a public person... You don't get... why don't I get my...
What about the hundreds of emails that have been pouring in and...
Anything that's come in prior is still part of the record, and you have a responsibility to review that. But it's just like saying the cutoff for any other submission is 5 o'clock on Friday. That's it. You know? So, we might have staff just say, thank you for your response, but the record on public comment on the proposed ordinance is
closed.
It was closed in... at 12 o'clock on Wednesday, whatever.
Yes.
I think that's the official policy of the board. It'd be fine.
All right. Well, I responded to an email about bees today, so I...
Only bees are talked about in the ordinance, so I think you're okay.
Are they?
I don't think they're talked about in the ordinance, so I think you're okay.
Well, their concern was related to the ordinance because of bees. So
you're going to have to use your best judgment.
I responded and I CC'd legal on it, so they have the documentation.
I just thought that was a good thing that we should get out there. Cross-training. So in our office, I've asked for this for pretty much a year, but I'm going to insist that before the end of the year that there's a legal staff person. I know she's covering the law library, but she's also probably the most easily... So that one might be easy. But we've hired a person in HR and finance to do some stuff. I don't really care how they solve this problem, but I need the board's reiterated support to make sure that we've got cross-training in the board's office. The point is that we have one person who's really trained in how to facilitate these meetings, but we've got two people in our office.
They
both need training.
So they both can cover everything.
Yeah. And the only I see it initially, the only way to get trained initially is to see what happens here. You know, if you're asked to come in here and you've never been in here before and don't know what you're supposed to be doing, that's not okay.
It would. The other opportunity is if we allowed the front window to be closed and put a note saying we're attending this meeting, we will reopen after the meeting or something like that. That would allow both.
That's a possibility, but I would rather the window stay open. That's been the board's position.
Is there some other department that we can call?
That's what I'm asking for. Is we're saying all of these should be trained to do.
Just anybody can come in and just say, you know, would you come over and sit in the, guard the window for an hour while we, going back to time off and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Here's Wendy going. What am I going to do? We have a weekly business sessions and Tuesdays and Thursdays. I'm stuck.
So one concern I have is we've approved some changes in legal, and the position that was authorized to be cross-trained is not technically there right now. That's also vacant.
Not full-time. They're part-time in the law library.
No, her other part-time got moved to a different position. She's no longer the assistant.
Yeah, she's a paralegal.
She's now a paralegal.
So you have a place.
We're not going to get hung up on that for this.
No.
For this purposes, but just, technically that's accurate. Yeah.
I just wanted to point out she's not
Wally in his office. Somebody.
Sometimes that's how it is, too,
right? Well, not because you're not qualified, but let's be honest.
I've got a great idea. Yeah, the Fords are here every time. We can put one of the Fords on the window.
Sure. Not a bad plan.
Their attendance is impeccable.
Okay.
We'll
get that solved. Regional solutions money. This county needs to lean into that issue. And you all are responsible for thinking of it. Just because you're the liaison for that, you need to be spearheading the Josephine County ask in this appropriation if you're going to be the liaison to this, which you are. So,
I've been the liaison for a month.
I just need you to be conscious of that. It's not as though that's a new responsibility for all of us. What I'm saying is that we have left that money to Jackson County for the last 4 years.
So what recommendations do we have as a board?
I would just,
mine's broadband. I think we need to put a package together for broadband and spearhead that effort. But that's something we need to have, you know, a conversation, get Julie in here and whoever else needs to play a role in that, and talk about it.
I attended quite a few things at conference at Regional Solutions. Basically, I didn't know they did that much. Mm. And every time I said, well, we could have helped with that. We could help that. And a couple of things, well, I don't know who to go to. Well, have you contacted Regional Solutions? I think they've got a reasonable budget that I don't know if we've tapped it. And you know, maybe it's something
it's not just
the
appropriations, you're right. It's the services that they're supposed to be providing to counties. I have had a thought about a manager's monthly report that the board have a quick paragraph on what's going on in each program and that's sent out to the entire board about what's going on. I think we've had that before. Feel like that would be a really good way to have that cross-pollinization of what's going on in each program. Something to think about maybe over the holidays that we institute in January, that at the end of the month that we see something from each manager. And it's not something they bring in here, but we each have a chance to review it via email.
Well, I think we should relook at the whole process of our interaction with managers. How the board ran and operated with the department heads was different before Raffenberg's term.
It's changed tremendously from that time.
Absolutely, but it's not necessarily been a good change. There's some elements that maybe are, but maybe we relook at the whole thing and see. I don't think the public is aware that how we operate is that one gets a third, one gets a third, one's a good third, but we don't all have equal access of information for all the departments. And I don't think that's necessarily beneficial, especially as liaisonships could change. And we all should be being kept apprised of everything. Every time I've been in the manager's meeting, I've said that. If you're informing your liaison of something, you should CC the other commissioners on the blind copy so we know what's going on. They're not doing it.
Well, that hasn't been the historic practice. And I wanted to make the point, I think this is a good segue. Asking for something to change as one commissioner is a tree falling in the forest. It means nothing unless the board agrees that that's okay. Because there could be another commissioner that says, I don't want to know any more than what my liaison, the board has delegated me these three programs. That's it.
Yeah.
I don't have any more responsibility than that.
Well, I mean, we can get into battles about liaisonships and various things.
There is no battle.
Well, are things that different people do step out and handle things in other departments that aren't. But I think the public's expectation is that we all equally are having access to all the departments. And
I think that's good on our what does the county do?
Sure.
And if we don't have transparency within our organization, how can they expect transparency out there?
It's not as though we don't.
It's not that we don't, but I mean,
it's
you know.
The historic practice has been through 8 different commissioners.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how it's been. People have liaisonships.
And so, 100 years before that, it was different for 100 years.
All you have to do, Commissioner Morgan, is ask if you want to change to the way we've done something. And the only way that changes should happen in this office
is through the whole board.
Is through the whole board.
And all I said is that we should have a discussion about are we actually.
You gave an illustration of when you asked the managers to CC you on actions that have been taken in an office or correspondence between their liaison. and you said that you haven't been getting that. The reason you may not have been getting that is because that's a deviation from the board's approved historic practice.
Okay.
So if you wanted to change that, I think it's a great recommendation. And my recommendation is to codify those interactions in a monthly report. So maybe you don't get every email that every other commissioner gets from every manager, which my inbox is overwhelming. I can't manage it.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's the right thing, but I am saying that if there's something that we need to know, we all need to know it because we might be the on-call was my statement to them.
Correct.
I agree.
And so it's kind of one of those things that I think we should have further discussion. I don't mind getting the monthly reports, though they can get washed down in what they actually are saying because of how they happen. So I don't know if that'll be as efficient as
I haven't seen one yet, so I'm not sure how washed down it's going to get. But I think it's something we need to think about and maybe try in January.
I've adopted on my own personal side of it that every Monday morning I call every department I'm involved. How are you doing? Is there anything I need to look at? And so on. And they've read it. Hey, I appreciate you calling.
Yeah.
It's just an opportunity on Monday morning to do that. And find out, you know, from Lisa what's going on in Beth's, you know, and from Nate. You know,
I think that's great practice. To use another example, Commissioner Morgan and DeYoung, asking for the order to say that if you're going to send a cease and desist, you have to CC the board. That is a policy change that we're going to either agree on or not that says this is the way we're going to operate. That's another example of, I think, the way you want to administer processes as opposed to, you know, something that's going on the fly.
I agree to come from the whole board, and I have no problem.
Great.
With that.
I think we're all going to be in agreement. You just have to
get it out there.
Yeah, from the board.
Okay. And so with nothing else, we're going to go into executive session. Item number 5A is U.S. Forest Service lawsuit under ORS 192.6602H. We may not make a decision in executive session, just deliberations. At the end of executive session, we'll welcome the audience back into the room if any decision may need be making. Otherwise, the recorder will be turned off at 10:57. So we're back in public session at 11:11. Our discussion with the board resulted in wanting to grant legal counsel the authority to retain Stoll Reeves to look into the potential liability of the U.S. Forest Service managing catastrophic wildfire.
I would support this effort. I think that this is an important thing for us to evaluate and investigate moving forward, and the substantial impact on our community that is becoming an annual basis. And so my standpoint would be to support us moving forward.
I agree. I think it's something that's been going on for a long, long time, and this last year was certainly a premier example of what could happen. And it actually, as bad as it was this last year, it could get an awful lot worse if we don't stop it right now, if we don't address this right now. It just reached ahead.
Okay. I would agree. I think that when you look at what happened this last year, it was different than what we see for wildfires in other areas. And I don't want to second guess, you know, the performance of our valiant firefighters, anybody, whoever's doing it, you know. It's for me, it's the policy stuff that guides those people in that effort to do something that is, in our minds, my mind, potentially mitigatable. You can't mitigate a hurricane. It's coming, and nobody can stop it. But there's things that happen for decades prior to wildfire that lead up to the degree of catastrophe, you know. And that's what I'm looking at trying to hone in on to guide the Forest Service in a real strategic way to saying what you've been doing is not okay, because of the negative impact that it has on our community from a health standpoint, clean water, the Endangered Species Act, and everything that's caught between the crosshairs because of a decision really that was made a decade ago not to manage those forests in the right way. So with nothing further, the board is adjourned at 11:13. Oh, Commissioner Morgan.
I just got an email just before 11 o'clock that I see has been CC'd to both of you.
Okay.
I would ask that you guys look at that. It's I had been asked about approving a prevention team, focus team council to go to Washington, D.C. in February. What's different is that they've invited me as liaison to go as part of the group. Prevention is not something I've spent much time with. I've always been on a treatment focus. prevention's the other side of trying to keep people from having to need treatment. But I would like you guys to read through the documentation, and we can bring it back as a discussion next week. I'm going to approve them going as a group, but as far as me participating, I obviously would need any support, and this isn't something that I would like you guys just to weigh in on it.
Sure.
So I just want it, the email arrived at 10:57, so I didn't have time to bring it up earlier when you asked me. So
okay, we'll take a look. Okay, great. Nothing further. The board's adjourned 11:14.